Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Zurian Show. The Zurian Show brings and shares powerful and useful information to our listeners. The show is great for those looking for the positive in the world. The goal of the show is to share great information on a number of topics and great subjects. Many of the subjects covered are not only great information, but helpful insights. The Zurian Show even shares some of life's greatest lessons from time to time. Thank you for listening, and now to our host, Zurian.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening to The Zurian Show. As always, we hope that we find you in the best of health, wealth, happiness, and of course, good spirits. Today, ladies and gentlemen, we have the pleasure of talking with a gentleman that I see as a historian. And what makes him an historian and makes him a special historian is that he's one of those people in the African-American community that has not only reached back in history, but he's reached back into his own family's history to share some of the realities that someone in his own family, his grandmother, went through. And again, he's also a from what I understand, a phenomenal blogger, and I got to see that he was actually on a panel to become one of the most recognized or greatest bloggers out, and he's been doing it a long time. The gentleman has had a lot of experience in business and industry and, you know, being a man that's a little bit older than me, he's also experienced some of his own historic events in his own life growing up as an African American in America through some of our, I would call them, some of our more difficult times. Ladies and gentlemen, today we're going to get an insight on the Gracie Hall Hampton, Arkansas, from Arkansas, 1917 to 1950 story. And it's a Black history story, it's a family story, and it's something that I think all of us should actually really appreciate. And again, appreciate the fact that this man has taken the time to bring his history to us. And with no further ado, I'd like to introduce Mr. Cotis Hampton II. How are you, sir?
Oh, just fine, and thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for coming on the show, and again, for taking the time to quantify the history of your life. You know, I really found it interesting reading your bio and watching some other stuff that you've done. But with that, could you tell us a little bit about you, please?
Well, who is Cotis Hampton II? Like to say, to know who I am today, one would have to know where I came from. And we all have a history that we're mostly proud of. I'm someone who can point to a number of jobs and positions in my career that led me to this point and purpose in my life. As far back as the mid-70s, while still attending junior college, I opened a retail outlet, gift and record store, in my hometown of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Luckily, we had a great location next to a well-established pizza restaurant and was doing fairly well. Yet I had to close it after almost 2 years because of the inability to get an expansion loan. That is when I learned the true meaning of a collateral requirement in a business loan, because all my wife and I had was a hoopty and a rented apartment. So, you know, I was we were lucky enough to find that a friend of mine and I stayed late one night at the shop playing chess. And about 11 o'clock that night, all of a sudden, cars start coming onto the lot heading toward the pizza place. And the first thing I thought that came out of my mind is, I got to change my hours because these are potential customers, you know. Mm-hmm. Which we did, and that's how we became began doing very well at that spot. But unfortunately, as I said, you, first thing you learn is the bank don't care how much money you make, and what they want to know is what collateral do you have? So I had to close it. My wife,
yes, sir.
And I decided, my wife and I decided to move our family and two kids to California. I was so hurt behind losing, you know, having to leave Milwaukee. But we made up our mind just before the closure. Then, of course, my wife got pregnant. I took a test for a federal government position in the San Francisco Bay Area where we were moving to. few months later, I accepted a job offer, ironically from a lady I eventually called my West Coast mother. She was such a nice person when I got here.
Wow.
She, you know, she called me at our home, and she allowed me to wait another month and a half for the birth of our youngest son before reporting to work. Yeah, so it was a turning point in both me and my wife's career. That was in September of 1978. So my wife gave birth to our youngest son, as I alluded to. A week later, I reported for work, having driven to Oakland, California.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, my wife, who was a nurse's aide in Milwaukee, became an LVN, finally retiring from a hospital here called Highland in Oakland a little over a year ago. So the whole move was, the move came out of something that hurt me because we had to close the shop and I had to leave home. But it turned out to be a very good move in a lot of good ways for my family and I.
Outstanding. So it was a bit of a change of career and a path at that point.
Right, exactly. Yep.
Outstanding.
Go ahead.
Say again, sir?
No, I was just going to say, go ahead.
I guess the next thing you could tell us about is, so I guess you can give us a little bit more on Hampton's Corner and your world.
Well, that was it. After the move, I guess I'll take you back a little bit. My advancements ran the gamut from the supply clerk to payroll, which was the job I reported to accounting and purchasing agent. I ended up retiring in 1996 as a director of small purchase for the Department of Defense out here.
Okay.
Frankly, the pending closure of our base prompted my early retirement. So bottom line is we ended up on the base closure list. So I figured, hey, let me just get out there and see what I could do, because I always wanted to open my own business again. I formed C. Hampton II Agency before I retired, about a year before I retired. The mission was to help small businesses with their payroll, monthly accounting, including home expense budgeting and preparing their taxes. In other words, acting as their administrative office.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had about 6 clients at the time, a couple of daycares, a group home, disc jockey. I was all in with the computer age and how they would help small business. Unfortunately, helping all these people, I found myself doing a lot of work for people who could not pay me the going rate for my output.
Wow.
It was a case of my doing too much for some people who did not necessarily want to grow or improve their business processes. A few was just happy being in business, while others were busy running their business and happy to let me do some admin work. The bottom line is they, you know, they, it was a new business to them. I was helping in all the things like government forms that needed to be prepared and filed and stuff like that. So
okay.
I kind of began writing a lot of political satire as I started writing in my past time, so to speak, or my my idle time, so to speak. So, like I said, I became interested in the political arena. I had fun there with Bill Clinton for a minute, but I found a gold mine of material with the selection, and I do mean selection, of George W. Bush as president. You know I'm talking about the man with all hat and no cap. So, yeah, that's when I sort of, as I went on writing a newsletter, newsletter with those type of opinions in it, leading with my articles, being the opinionated articles, and had other couple of people writing with me. That's what led me to Hemp's Corner of America. I sort of chose that name to sort of stake out my little corner in America, I guess. Just wanted the people to know where I'm coming from and what I thought of certain, policies and all that stuff, mostly political, that was being put out there by the government. And
right.
I wanted to get their reaction.
Very cool. Did you get much of a reaction back from them, or was it fulfilling?
Oh, yeah. I think, I'm a people person, and I like to watch how people react to certain things, almost anything. And, of course, all you got to do is just watch the people on the corner, your neighbor talking. I did a lot of talking with people, and those are the opinions that I wrote, And, of course, I added my two cents in to say, here's one way of looking at that particular situation. But mostly it's the audience and the reaction you get from the people that's most entertaining and most effective, because they understand. There's a lot of people in our political circles and a lot of people in our neighborhoods that think a lot of people are dumb and don't understand what's going on, but that's not true. They understand.
Yes, sir. And your first book that you wrote was about your 13 months in the Army in South Korea?
Yeah. That I did it when I was 17. I decided to enlist in the Army, partially because I thought high school wasn't teaching me nothing. Of course, I was a hard-headed young boy then in Milwaukee. You know how that go. So... when I had written so many articles in the newsletter and written other things, I decided to tackle a book. And, yes, that was my first book. It was called Un Chinee. It's a semi-autobiographical book revolving around my 13th Army tour in South Korea. And, of course, Un Chinee was a little village right outside off of the base, Camp Kaiser,
mm-hmm.
at that time. It's no longer there, but it was there at that time. The book was published in early November 2010. I think the following quote pretty much sums up Un Chinee for me, if I can give you the quote.
Please do.
Says, "I wanted to be the man my father thought I would become. Events and incidents facilitated my growth beyond my wildest dreams. By just being in that environment, there were some things I learned by accident. Unlike in high school, I was paying attention. That's why the memories are etched in my mind. If I close my eyes and lean my head back in a chair, I can still see the streets of Un Chinee and smell the pungent odor that permeated the air of the village. It's as if I'm standing there today." So, yeah, that
wow.
was, had a modest success with it. Bottom line is I wrote a large book. Didn't know too much about what I was doing. I was just writing. I had two editors who was helping me, so I was just trying to put down this story. Turned out when I got through, the book was so doggone large, I ended up had to put it in a tabletop format.
Wow.
Yeah, so. But we still have it, and it's good reading about, I've had some very good responses from people who've read it, and so it's a good book.
I have to recommend it to my father-in-law. He was in Nam, and he's also prior Army.
Yeah. See, that was about that time. I got out in 1965, and I just did miss Vietnam by 30 days, even though I volunteered for it when I came back from Korea. Unfortunately, you had to be in the States another 13 months after an overseas tour. But at that time, it wasn't a real war. It was just advisors over there then. So, but, yeah, I lost time. Yeah, my whole unit went over there just before I left. It was that's a whole story within itself there, talking about Vietnam.
Yeah, most people don't talk about it. Actually, my father-in-law really doesn't talk about it. And my grandfather was actually one of the Buffalo Soldiers, so, you know, he didn't really talk about that either.
Yeah.
So it's a very deep thing, and as I'm actually a retired Marine, so I'll tell you now, after 22 years in the Marine Corps, thank you for your service, sir, because you set you set the bar and opened up a lot of things for us.
Yeah,
so with all of that said, could you tell us about your book that you just put out, and give the listeners a little bit of a taste of what that book is about and all of the above, please?
The book is based upon the life of my grandmother. The story begins around her 16th birthday and follows up her up until the time she left her home of Banks, Arkansas. It was released a week before last Christmas. Sort of wrote the book so that my family and others could meet Gracie Hall Hampton. I wanted my son's daughter and their sons or daughters to understand her. They should know how this 5-foot woman survived in a segregated state of Arkansas, given the 1917 through 1953 timeline of this book that saw the Great Flood, Depression, and World War II. She was limited to her 8th grade education, living while nestled up to a tree line of timber where black bears, wolves, coyotes, and an occasional mountain lion roamed. She managed to raise 5 children in that same environment, even after death of her husband.
Wow.
Yeah. The book is sort of based upon stories provided by my father, cousins, and other family members. I came from an era where children were seen but not heard. You know how they go.
Yes, sir.
Our folk, many who migrated from Jim Crow South, were often tight-lipped about family matters. My father would tell me stories that you had to piece together, you know, because he wouldn't give you the full story at one time. First of all, he had to be in a talkative mood, normally on weekends after a couple of beers or shots. You know, there you go.
Yes, sir.
He would start with, boy, you just don't know how it was back then. And I wouldn't say a word, hoping he'd continue the story, but in my mind, I remember thinking, no, I don't, Daddy, because you haven't told me the whole story yet. Please. Eventually, I would get it at him, but it probably would not be in one conversation. So that's where the story sort of began, you know.
Well, the great thing is that you were intuitive enough and curious enough to want to know. You know, most of us in the African-American community still don't know very much about our history. So that's really a monumental and a phenomenal thing that you've done for your family by bringing your grandmother back to life, basically, because she lives in your writing.
Yeah. She, you know, she was of the, you know, and most grandparents, well, most of our grandparents, I would say grandparents of my age, maybe even yours, you know, they were, as I said, kind of tight-lipped about things that happened in the family. They didn't like to talk a lot. But the stories that they could tell, it gives one meaning for who we are, you know. I mean, it lets you know where you came from. Those are the stories that we need to be reminded of, that we came from a proud people who walked this earth and did many great things. And, I mean, you know, that needs to, that's why I think those type of stories need to be told. That's why I tried to, you know, put those type of, or the way she was living back then in those days in a book format so that people could understand. I mean, you know, we think about it, but sometimes we just tend to forget about it as we go throughout our daily lives. One of the incidents that happened in the first chapter starts a chain of reaction events throughout the book. The incident itself happened because the white man's dog spooked the black man's family. It was a black family's horse team, causing one of the horses to stomp the dog to death. So you can imagine you know, what kind of stuff came from that.
Yeah, that retaliation.
Yeah, you know, and again, you know, as I said, you're back there in the deep south, so you know, there's a one of the other thing is there's a birth that occurs where my grandma Gracie is assisted by a midwife while having her first child, which also happens to be my father. I remember thinking about after the book was published, I had already agonized while writing the event, but in my mind, it was still these questions. Did I give it the respect and reverence a grandson from that birth should have? You know, I'm sure I gave the reader enough of in-depth description of the birth, but, you know, it's kind of surreal that you're writing about the birth of your father from your grandmother, you know?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Before we go any further, could you tell everybody how they can get in contact with you and how they could actually get a copy of the book and all of that? I don't want us to keep going and not share that information.
Okay. No. The book is available at Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com. You can also get it from our publisher, and the publisher is Author House. But all you really have to do is go to AuthorHouse.com, or as I said, Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com, and there's a book order hotline from Author House, and the number is 1-888-280-7715. Or you can find the book information at my blog, which is www.katara-rhythm.com, or my company site at www.chiia.com. And I should spell Katara, which is K-A-T-A-R-A, as www.katara-rhythm.com. That's where my blog is hosted. And you can find information on the book at that site as well.
Okay. And you also have a LinkedIn and an email address, correct?
I do. A LinkedIn account and an email address. People can reach me at chamption2@msn.com. Or you can write Dakotas Hampton II, P.O. Box 668, Pittsburgh, California, 94565. But the email would probably be much faster. And as I said, that's chamption2@msn.com.
Yes, sir. Well, again, my hat's off to you for actually being able to pull that history out, because I know a lot of people of African-American descent, you can't get the information out of your parents or your grandparents, in some cases because they don't remember some of the history, and in other cases it's because of all of the unknown yet known atrocities that actually occurred. So again, that's very deep in the emotional part for it, plus that a lot of people don't understand that, especially back in some of those slave areas, you know, those little plantations or areas were almost like little concentration camps, because we don't have roads and transportation and all of that stuff like we do now, so we take it for granted.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, very, 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 very cool that you're able to do that. I mean, I'd love to have something like that for myself. Could you give us a little bit of information? We got how to receive the book, which I'm going to ask you again before we close, and also, do you have any advice for first-time authors, future authors, or somebody else that might want to do something similar?
Well, you know, I found that the best advice that I could give out is to write about those things in which you're familiar. Obviously, when you go out of your comfort zone, you're going to have to do research in order to, you know, make sure that what you're putting down is accurate. And that's why research is why I think they made computers, you know. So you can Google almost anything, but the main thing is when you're writing, be be comfortable with what you're saying. And I think that helps a lot and takes some of the jitters out. That is why I ended up being, you know, the first book I wrote was about my my stay in Korea.
Yes, sir.
So, yeah, that would be, and of course, make sure you had the tools of the trade, which, as I said, in my opinion, is a computer, a good word processing program, and a grammar checker, and then make sure you have a good editor.
Yes, sir. I totally agree. And I know our listeners and those also in the chat room would totally agree, too. We also have Business Networkers 1, Business Negotiator 1. They're actually a regular listener to us, and these guys are just awesome. They truly are.
Yeah.
Herb and Alan, they're business professionals, and I know at least one of them is a bit older than me, so he can attune with you.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, they also have a show on Blog Talk. Again, that's Business Negotiators 1. Herb and Alan, they basically try to help business people. So that might be a good contact for you if you're still working in that arena.
Oh, yeah. I think, I'm always trying to expand my knowledge because we never know it all, that's for sure.
Well, there's another thing that you said that's really key. You know, all of us need to start working together, and we need to understand that if each one teaches one, we'd improve our overall status as a people, as a nation, and it would truly raise us all up. You know, you can't forget the past. It is incredibly important and should never be forgotten. So, again, I've already said it like 4 times, but I'm really, my hat's off to you because you took the time, you put out the energy, and you're sharing that message. That's priceless, Mr. Yeah. Hampton. That truly is.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah,
I think there's
a lot of people out there that's beginning to join in that our thought pretty much, or our perspective on what needs to be done to keep the black community enlightened. But it's a slow process.
Yes, sir. But the other thing we need to look at is that economical position, because as George C. Frazier would say, you know, as a nation, when it comes to our ability to produce at this point in time, I don't care how much money you as an individual have, as a people, we don't matter because we don't produce anything. We don't really own anything. There's great wealth in us, but we're the number one spenders of our wealth,
yes,
but not the number one creators, which
yeah,
is really bad. Anyway, sir, could you give us the title, again, how to get in contact with you for anybody that wants to get a copy of your book or wants to reach out to you because you're also an avid blogger and another business professional?
Okay. Yeah, the title of the book, again, is Gracie Hall Hampton, The Arkansas Years, the time period 1917 to 1953. You can get the book at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, or my publisher, AuthorHouse.com. You can reach me at champton2@msn.com for any information you might need directly from me. Or you could go to my blog hosting site, which is www.katara-rhythm.com. And those are the places where I'm sure one of those places, you know, you can get some information that will enable you to get the book and find out what we're doing in the future to try to enlighten our own little community here.
Outstanding. Well, again, sir, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show, for sharing your story, sharing your experience, and all of the things that you're doing to make your mark in history and to keep the history of your grandmother alive. That's also really, really deep for me. It truly is. I appreciate it. Ladies and gentlemen, today we got blessed to speak with Mr. Cotis Hampton II, and the gentleman's written more than one book. He's a business professional. He's a blogger. He's a historian. He's somebody that's walked the walk and talked the talk. And, again, he's another one of those heroes who we don't know, but they are heroes all the same and need to be respected. So, Mr. Hampton, again, if there's anything else you'd like to share with the listeners, please share it, and then we'll close.
No, just that, hey, we have to, as you said before, stop being consumers and start being owners. That's the bottom line.
Hi, sir. I totally agree.
Right.
So with
thank
that,
you,
sir,
for having me.
Thank you for, again, blessing us with your actions, which actually required us to pay you some attention.
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome. All right, ladies and gentlemen, again, if you like the show or any shows that we share, please feel free to, one, follow us on The Zurian Show on Blog Talk Radio. Also, if this show hits something for you or pulled a chord for you that is something that you want to share with other people, please share the show with other people and reach out to Mr. Hampton II, and also share the show with any and everybody that you think would actually appreciate it. We're at 38,800, and we're constantly growing, but we are only talking to ourselves if you're not listening. So, again, this is Zurian wishing you every success, and take care, be well, and that's it for us. Farewell.